on Facebook somewhere.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind, in your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. Day Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is Book Talk. It's brought to you by MJ Network in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, and Julie Bates is here. And we have her amazing book, Rise to Rebellion, A Faith Clark Mystery. And if you haven't read it, I don't know what you're waiting for. Summer of 1776, different missions call Faith Clark and Jeremy Butler, who I love, to Philadelphia, where delegates are meeting to determine the path of the rebellious American colonies. Faith has been called back to her childhood home to make peace with her terminally ill mother. While Jeremy has been summoned by General Washington to report to Philadelphia to deal with a crisis impacting a continental crisis, yet nothing seems at what it is. Oh, Julia's here, and I'm not going to tell you anything more because if I read the rest of the back cover, it'll spoil the fun of reading the book. So good morning and welcome to MJ Network.
Well, good morning, Fran. It's nice to talk with you.
Well, this just really got me. That first scene, I was like, I read it three times. The first chapter is filled with uncertainty, brutality, and danger as the passengers that have to go to Philadelphia are attacked. Was this real? Does this really happen? Do those soldiers really think that they could do this and get away with it and victimize people?
Well, you've got to remember, the colonies are in turmoil.
Yeah.
You've got they're in rebellion against the British, and you have American militias. So, you know, it's possible. With the events I planned, they're possible. So, and plus, Tarleton, who I referenced there, if you read American history, you'll read more about Banaster Tarleton, and he was considered fairly brutal.
That's horrible. That is absolutely horrible. So how does this set the scene for events to come, and whose side are they on?
Well, I think because in my previous two books, I have alluded that the American Revolution is building up, things are going on, and this makes it clear that it's, you know, the war is coming home, it's going to impact everyone. Because this is the first time Faith especially has been directly confronted with the fact there is a war going on. Because we have the British troops, and Faith and Jeremy are somewhat surreptitiously on the Patriot side. They supply it. They're not soldiers, but they do supply information. So this is bringing it home to them, the reality of war and the cost of it.
That is scary. So tell us about Faith and how she got involved in all of this, and about Jeremy and who sent him and why.
Well, Faith is the protagonist in my book. But she was raised Quaker in Pennsylvania. She married outside the faith and ended up in Williamsburg. And after the death of her husband, she became a business owner and the breadwinner for her family. She pretty reluctantly became involved in the Patriot cause because a tavern is a good listening post. And she had family from her husband who supported her and helped her, that she started allowing them to do things like leave horses through messenger and come in. So she's been gradually pulled into this pretty much against her will because she would rather be focusing on earning a living and taking care of her family. Jeremy is the opposite. Jeremy met Washington during the French and Indian War when he was a boy. And so he's always been heavily influenced by Washington. He was an early recruit to be a spy. He's pretty much an 18th century James Bond.
Oh, cool.
He gathers information and shares with Washington, and then as they form the people in the Continental Congress. So he's on a mission to Philadelphia because Washington requested he come. He said there was something important meeting. So Germany doesn't know what's going on, but he will obey Washington.
That's amazing.
Nathan's traveling because she's received a letter that her mother is very seriously ill and she needs to travel.
So she's traveling, and where's he going? So tell us about my favorite people. I love John Hancock, Benjamin Franklin, Adams and Jefferson, John Adams and Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson. How come they were part of this novel, which made it really more interesting?
Well, they are part of the novel because at this time of the summer, they're getting together to draft what will become the next. They're representatives from all 13 colonies there, and they are forging what they will do because they have tried negotiating with Britain, and it hasn't gone anywhere.
That's amazing. So how do we know from the start that it's more about, not just about the Declaration of Independence or about the signing of anything? How do we know that there's more to this than meets the eye?
Well, I think first of all, they're being fairly secretive of how they're meeting. So when they met at the Philadelphia, what was known as the Philadelphia State House, they covered the windows. They were very secretive about it. And even with Butler, who they've summoned through Washington, they're not telling him too much. But also, they need his help with the problem. Because and Washington has recommended Butler for the job because things, accidents keep happening, and Hancock, who's leading the Continental Congress, doesn't think that this is random. Someone's trying to do them in. And they need Butler to find out who's doing this so they can continue on with the business of creating a new country.
Well, the problem also is, you know, how they communicate. I mean, they don't exactly have telephones or I don't know if they have telegraphs, probably. They have to have some kind, unless they have the writers coming to give them information. It must be hard in order to communicate.
Well, telegraphs are more of a 19th century thing because that came in line with Samuel Morse. So in the 18th century, you have letters. You have messages.
Yeah.
And with a spy network, you had to have secret codes. And there were a lot of secret codes. You had what's known, for secret messages, you had what's known as a dead drop, which is basically a place where one person drops off information, and then another person will come at another time to pick it up, and it's passed along, and you don't necessarily know who sent it, but it's someone in the network. But letters are very important this time, and so is methods of concealing what you're actually writing about in case your letter was seized.
That's amazing.
And also there's ways of ruling messages because in New York they had what was known as the Culper Gang. And one of the members of the Culper Gang was a woman. And when there was a message to be sent, she would hang out her laundry and she would hang out a black petticoat. And from where she hung her laundry, you could see her laundry for miles around. So her contact knew the black petticoat meant she had a message to pass around. And that's not in the book. That's actually a piece of our history. So
that is
messages.
Interesting. You know what's really sad is that kids today don't learn all of this stuff. They're not taught all of this the right way. And I know because I did the Revolutionary War. We actually acted out some scenes because I taught sixth grade. It was fun. But I don't think they know enough about the history of America to appreciate the fact that they're here in this country. That's what's really sad. So we have... We have another character that is very mysterious here. Faith connects with her sister Hannah. What's their problem, and how come they don't get along? They're not that close.
That's true. Well, Hannah is older than Faith, And Faith left from a very bossy older sister, which Hen didn't take well. And I'll see about the fact Faith managed things.
This less static here.
Yeah, the connection is not very, I'm afraid the internet is not very, very good where I'm at. I'm in the middle of the country. But Hannah managed things at home. And when she left and got married, that left a vacuum. Because Hannah managed their mother, who had a lot of anxiety and other things. So when she left, the others had to cope. And Hannah pretty much, once she made her escape, she didn't have a lot of contact with the family. And when Faith married outside of the Quaker faith, she was shunned because she didn't marry someone in the faith. So Faith was cut off from her family. So you have two women who've had to find their own way to survive a difficult situation. And Faith, I think, probably subconsciously resented that Hannah got away long before she did.
And sort of, they sort of resent each other in a sense. So how did they react to? How did they react to what the soldiers did? And of course, we know that Faith is homesick, so she does. She has to be there, but she doesn't really want to be there, does she?
No,
because she has a business to attend to.
She has a business, and she has a tight little network of friends and family that she has made her home. She's pretty much been guilted to come back to Pennsylvania. She's not very happy about it. And there is a sense of shock and horror with being attacked by soldiers because she has nothing to compare this to. You know, she's led a, you know, despite losing her husband, she's had a fairly sheltered life. She's never seen anything like this before.
That is sad. So the family was estranged from her. Who is Isaac Payne, and what about his wife, and why is Faith shunned? I like Faith. How could you not like her?
Well, Isaac and Patience Payne are Faith's parents.
Yeah,
so they are parents, and Faith is from a family of six children. She was shunned because her husband, who is deceased at this point, was not Quaker. She married outside of the faith. And so she pretty much, you know, was not welcome in church and stuff because she was outside of their faith, their religion. And so, you know, they acknowledged her, but she was not welcome there anymore, which she married. She moved to Williamsburg, so she was away from that. But it was difficult for her.
That happens today, too, you know. It's not so far off in a lot of faiths. If you don't adhere to it, I know. Trust me, I do know. So who is Frieda? And what about this Aunt Deborah reveals something to Faith? And she doesn't want to heed her warnings.
Well, Frieda is the family cook. She has been there forever. So she knows a lot about the family. She's kind of like part of the family, but not part of the family, because she has been there for years. So she knows things, and she's also an anchor for the family. Aunt Deborah, again, since you had all these family in Pennsylvania, they've known each other for years. They know the secrets. And Deborah, because when Faith starts asking questions, Deborah decides that Faith is old enough to know some things. Even though she the idea is to let her know with the hopes that once Faith has something, has the information, she'll just drop it, which does not happen, but that was the hope.
That's scary. That is scary. A lot of times when you try to reveal a secret, somebody gets hurt too. So who is Gaius and what happened to him and why?
All right. Gaius is a slave of John Hancock. He's kind of like a valet. And Butler wants to question him about some of the previous attempts to harm the Congress since Gaius was there. And Gaius does not want to talk to him. He catches Gaius sneaking out of a meeting and he's pursuing him, and Gaius ends up being killed by an arrow, being killed as Butler's pursuing him, and Butler is not the one who kills him. So someone basically silenced him before he could talk.
Now, on page 79, I actually quoted this on my question page. Butler's words on page 79 says, "It is all my life to be forfeited to provide freedom for the colonists, so be it. This is my home, my country. There is much more. Why should ordinary people pay for the king's pleasure?" Why did he say that? And he's got a point there.
Well, Butler is all into the revolution. Because he has seen the cost with, I'm lost the name here, but Nathan Hale. He knows what happens to Nathan Hale. He knows if he's caught, he's going to be executed. But he's decided it's worth the cost. And part of this has to do with where Butler came from, because Butler came across the ocean as an immigrant, as a child, and his background is he was Irish, which the Irish have never had good relationships with the British. So he knows no matter what the British say, you can't trust him. That is his perspective. And he wants better for his new country. He wants better for his friends, for the family he has left. And he considers his life worth sacrificing for if it can bring freedom to these colonies.
A lot of people wouldn't do that now, and then there were some that would fight for their country forever. So Hannah White, what is her business? And tell us about her clients.
All right. Hannah White is Faith's older sister.
Yep.
Hannah has developed a business selling china, which she gets imported from Europe.
Mm.
And so she has the clients who have the money to afford fancy china. They come in and order dinner sets and tableware and things that are for the moneyed class. But she has her own business. When her husband died, his adult children pretty much tried to turn her out. But she was fortunate. She did have enough money from her husband that she could have a home and run a small business. So she has her personal independence. And her clients are among the better class of Philadelphia.
I know from whatever. That was interesting. Now, this part really got me this. This is amazing. I love Benjamin Franklin. But William Franklin is imprisoned. Why is he imprisoned? And what about his relationship about his son, which is not a good one?
All right, William Franklin, for those that don't know, is Benjamin Franklin's illegitimate son. He is Franklin's only living son.
Mm.
They were close for a while because when William was young, he helped Franklin with his experiments. He went to London with him. He was very well educated. And William Franklin became the royal governor of New Jersey just before the Revolution broke out. And he and his father broke over the American colonies because Franklin, as we know, favored revolution and favored an independent country. William was the opposite. He was loyal to the king. He was loyal to the parliament in England. And their relationship fell entirely apart about it.
Mm.
William Franklin was imprisoned because as governor of New Jersey, he was doing everything he could to support the king and crown. And later, when the Patriots moved into New Jersey, he was under house imprisonment and basically warned, you can stay there, but we're watching you. You know, this is a new country now. But William Franklin was everybody as stubborn as his father. He made an effort to pass any information he could on to the Tories and to the British. And in order to shut him up, they put him in prison.
So there are mixed feelings about that. Some people might say, well, he's on the other side, so he's helping. And then he's living in America. He's a traitor, in a sense, too. So that's interesting. So how
Benjamin
did you
Franklin never forgave him?
I know he didn't. I love Benjamin Franklin. But he had morals to a point. He did. And it was true to America. So how did you intertwine Hannah's faith and those who wanted to decide the fate of the colonies on both sides? And how did her shop come into play with all of this?
Well, Hannah is also a Quaker, which the Quakers were fairly, for the most part, neutral. Hannah did not have an opinion on the revolution. She did not like how the British were making it hard for her to import goods for her shop. But she has a relation, as you noted. Faith is her younger sister. They've been dealing with their mother. And she gets up involved without really planning on it because she takes in Butler after he's been beaten up. But she, as in her shop, she can hear everything because these women are in their shopping. They're talking to each other. They don't really pay attention to the shopkeepers. They don't think what they're saying in front of people around them. And truthfully, this is how spies have worked for a long time, because people are talking to their friends and they don't think about what they're revealing to people sitting next to them or in the same room or whatever. So Hannah is learning a lot of things in the course of her business, though she hasn't necessarily decided what to do with them.
Well, people today are the same. They don't listen to what people are saying anyway. You walk into a store, you mumble with your friends, there could be two people talking about a murder in Bahakan, you're not paying attention. Which is really sad. It's scary. Now, this is really interesting. Who were the members of the assembly chamber, and why did Butler need new clothes? So who were the members of the committee of the assembly? Who was part of it? That would make
well,
decision?
We've already mentioned some of them, because you've got Samuel Adams, you've got John Adams, John Hancock. Basically, you have representatives from each of the colonies. Butler needed clothes because his luggage was destroyed by the British when they stopped the stagecoach and were searching for information about the Patriots. At first, he ends up wearing clothes from Hannah's dead husband, which means he looks like a good Quaker, but it's not exactly appropriate for meeting with the Continental Congress. He has very limited wardrobe because everything was pretty much destroyed.
So I remember going to Pennsylvania a long time ago, going into the different stores and stuff. It was kind of different meeting the Quakers. And in different places, they had different reactions to people that came from other states, other countries, other different faiths. But it was interesting. So tell us about Fournier, his wife, and himself.
All right, Francis Fournier and his wife Lizette are basically members of the upper crust of Philadelphia. He has made his money in sugar because sugar is a big moneymaker. They have plantations out in the West Indies, and they can make rum and molasses and things like that. So he's quite affluent, and so is his wife. And they give a lot of parties for people. They haven't really chosen a side. So depending on who's in power in Philadelphia at the time, that's who they're inviting. Fournier is apolitical. He hasn't chosen a different side. He's interested into who he can make the most trade with, who will let his ships in, who he can trade with. So it does not benefit him to choose a side in this conflict.
This is more like money and wealth. And just like this society, less like today, classes matter. Which kind of class, upper class you come from, how you look and how much money you have is how they judge you. It doesn't make you a nicer person. It just makes that you have a lot of money. So what? And that's what's really sad. So this is where it gets interesting. Her mother's name is Patricia, Faith's mother, right? And Patricia...
It's actually Patience, but...
Patience. She asks Faith to do something. She asks her to find somebody. And why does Faith do that? Why does she want to do that?
Well, this is about finding peace. Patience knows she's dying. She's had pretty much a massive stroke. She's not recovering. And her mind goes back to her regrets, the mistakes she's made in her past, and thinking about how do I make peace with this before I die? How do I do this? And Lizzie is one of those mistakes. And in Faith, because, you know, Faith was the rebel. Faith would leave, you know, Faith left home. Faith can do things. She's hoping Faith can help her find a way to make peace with Lizzie so she can find acceptance for herself for what has been done. She sees Faith as the one who can do this. And Faith has never had a good relationship with her mother. She sees, after all the conflict and argument, perhaps this is a way we can come together. This is something I can do.
Well, we'll find out if she did it or if she wanted to do it. I wonder how many people in Faith's position whose mother really didn't accept her because of who she married would actually go her way and take a chance and find somebody like that, or find her sister.
That's hard to know.
I don't know. What about Hannah? Was Hannah part of this to find the sister, or did Faith just do it by herself?
Hannah and Faith worked together because Hannah is still the big sister, and Hannah understands about patience because that patience was not an easy person to grow up under. So
yeah.
Hannah is willing to help, and Hannah has the connections in Philadelphia that patience does, that Faith does not.
So that does help. So who is Nathan, and who is Mrs. Crawford, and what happened to her?
All right, Nathan
Cranford.
Nathan's last name is not Cranford. Nathan is works in the china shop.
Yeah.
He is the he is Hannah's nephew. He is the son of one of her late husband's sister-in-law. I have to remember how I phrased it. So he works in the shop. He had an accident when he was younger where he lost a leg. Medicine was pretty brutal back in this time. So Hannah allows him to work in the shop so he has a way to earn a living, and he helps her out there. Mistress Cranford lives in town. She and her husband are fairly well-to-do, and she comes in and shops in the china shop. And she is one person that Faith and Hannah wonder if she could be the person that their mother is looking for or not. And that's something they do, and they're trying to find out.
So how does this whole thing impact Faith, this whole journey that she's looking to help her mother? How does it tend to play on her mind and everything? And, of course, she wants to go home.
Faith would like to be back in Williamsburg, but she's in Philadelphia. And one of the reasons she's taken this mission is just sitting at the family farm and waiting for her mother to die does not sit well with her. It drives her up the wall. She's a woman who's used to working all day. She needs a task to occupy her. So she takes this on. And she's finding out things she never knew about her mother. I think this actually humanizes her mother a good deal for her.
Yeah.
But it also she realizes just how reinforces for how restrictive life is for women in this period.
Her mother had a memory issue, right? She sort of like a case of dementia, sort of. Her mind started to go. And there are times I know because my mother had the Alzheimer's, and at times they're very clear. They know exactly what they want to say, and they know exactly where you're coming from. So she really had to deal with a lot with patience. And the fact that she did this, I wonder if her mother really appreciated it, or didn't she realize it?
Well, again, I think, it depends on whether, because patients did have periods of lucidity.
Yeah.
So we would hope that she did.
Elizabeth Cranford and Faith have it out. How do we realize that she's in trouble? Because you don't want to mess with somebody like her.
Well, Elizabeth Cranford and Hannah have a confrontation.
Yeah.
And because Hannah, Hannah sees something at Elizabeth Cranford's house that she shouldn't have seen. And so Elizabeth Cranford realizes this is someone I'm going to have to silence. So she pretty much, she kidnaps Hannah. And we realize she's in trouble when she passes out, and then they roll her up in a rug and get prepared to take her somewhere.
It sounds just like America today. Nothing different. You get somebody that gets in your way, and you're just like, goodbye, too bad. So how do you create the scene, and why does the butler go to see William and confronting Cranford? Where does William come back into this story?
Okay. You're talking about the scene between Hannah and Elizabeth Cranford. You're talking about the scene with Butler and William.
The Butler and William.
All right. Butler's trying to figure out who could be after Franklin, because it's very clear with these attacks on the Congress that Franklin was there for all of them. And the most likely suspect is his estranged son. So Butler needs to talk to William Franklin to find out if he's the one who's trying to kill his dad. Is that what he's doing? And it is very risky, since Franklin is in custody. And people that, you know, he's out of his district because Butler's normally in Virginia. He doesn't have a lot of contacts in New Jersey and then Philadelphia. So even though he has credentials from Hancock, he has credentials from Benjamin Franklin and other people, he's not recognized, he's not easily trusted. But he just thinks it's worthwhile to go talk to William and see what's going on.
So how does Benjamin Franklin feel about the fact that he went to see his son? Does he have any kind of feeling at all?
Benjamin Franklin, again, he still has a deep-seated anger towards William because he and William have argued so much about the Revolution, and they took opposing sides. They're both very stubborn men. He's willing for Butler to go see William, though he doesn't, you know. And part of, I think Franklin doesn't believe William would kill him, but at the same time is it's better to check it out because the men have had a lot of anger and a lot of arguments.
So how does Butler see Faith, Hannah? What does he think about her? Because there's more to this than meets the eye, people.
There's a lot of stuff going underneath the surface. Because she is a very strong personality. She's independent. He respects her. But there's a mutual attraction there. They're both people who knows what it's like to lose someone and really don't intend to get involved with anyone else. But whenever they're together, the sparks are flying.
Well, before I forget,
he doesn't want to get involved with her. Yes?
I don't blame him, yeah. But that's kind of hard. Butler, I think Butler at one point feels like he's a Bettina, rock in a hard place. He's sort of in the middle, yet he wants to do what's right, yet he gets involved, and he has no choice at times.
Yes, because he gets in the situation without planning to. And that's hard for Butler because Butler tries to be prepared for everything. He wants to have very strong control over his life and his choices. And this situation with Hannah gets out of his control pretty quickly.
Well, before I forget, I did this easier this time. From Partners in Crime in my hand, so I don't mess up. The 27th, the machine murders. Could you imagine a machine, an AR machine that could kill people, that finds out who's guilty and who's not and can help get them murdered? It's really interesting. Then we have Fast Times in the City by Shelley Frome. We have Some Kind of Truth, which is next, and we have, I'm just trying to find that cheat again. Where is it? That doesn't help. And we have a whole bunch coming up in May. In May we have Jane Ann Krantz on the 6th, and we have John Lansing supposed to be on the 2nd. but we're not sure about the schedule. But Belsky is coming on the 18th, and for him, Fran's going to read three books because he's got a new series called The Nowhere Girls, and he's got several books in that series. So that should be interesting coming up. And let's go on with this. Why do we know that sometimes, as a result of all of this, good things happen from bad?
Well, I'm trying to think how I'm going to phrase that one. But I think in the story, you see that it starts out rough, but it brings people together. Because Faith and Hannah probably would not have connected again had it not been for their both coming together because they know their mother's dying. Butler would not have met Hannah if he had not have been going up. So sometimes good things happen in the midst of a tragic situation. Things that we couldn't have planned, couldn't have thought of, but happen as a result of things that are going on.
So Hannah and Faith sort of bond, but maybe not. And how did you create the last scene without giving it away? And that was very, very heartfelt, but yet what happens is you just don't know.
I think trying to do that, because you never want to give too much away too soon, so that a lot of thought goes in that, but you had to have, because at the end of a story, you've got to have it clearly who the killer is. And in my opinion, you have to have a why. And I hope I made that very clear. But also, at the end, the family needed to come together. Because, my thought is healing comes when we can have resolution, when we can make peace with the dark things in the past. And I wanted to show that, even though there is death, there is pain, life goes on. And that's one reason, right at the end there is a wedding, which actually when I started the book, I didn't know there was going to be a wedding in it, but the characters made that decision without consulting me and then told me about it later.
So where did they wind up with this thing with the Confederate Congress and all the rest of Adams and all the rest of them were trying to do? But there's another character there, Cyrus Lovell. So what does he have to do with all of this? And how do they feel
Lovell,
about somebody working
is,
for the British?
He is a Tory spy. He is pretty much he is the opposite. He is much like Jeremy Butler, but on the opposing side. And he actually tried to recruit Butler because he sees Butler as someone that could be dangerous or could be useful. He doesn't succeed, but he is probably going to keep appearing because, again, he is trying to get information for the British and Tories to help win the war, just as Jeremy Butler is providing information for the Patriots. So for them to cross paths, especially in Philadelphia, is not a surprise. Will they cross paths again? It's possible. Because, again, you have two very intelligent men on a mission, on opposing sides.
So who is Caleb? I know I'm going to read the last page, the last chapter. It's like, oh, my God. I read that three times. I said, oh, my God. That's so sad.
Caleb is Faith and Hannah's older brother. He is still at home on the farm, helping out on the large family farm. His wife, Bess, is there. He is rooted there on that farm. But he is their big brother.
So I'm looking at this on page 265, and there are deaths in this book, which is really sad. And she said something. The pain thought differently. Hannah's father told him she was the product of mistakes, and that's sad. That is really sad, because there are a lot of parents that, one child is the great one, and then there's the rest. So how do you feel when somebody says to you, you're really not good enough to be part of my family, or you're just different?
Well, I don't think they said she wasn't good enough. I think she said she was different. And plus, they were noting you know, that some choices were made that maybe weren't the best, like isolating Faith when she married outside the faith, you know, being so strict about things, because these are things that cause separation in the family. And I think when you end up losing a lot of people, you realize at the end of the day, different or not, this is your family. But families do make mistakes. They do make errors. And I think there has to be grace and there has to be forgiveness for healing to occur. I think some of people are better at that than others. Patience really struggled with that, because I think the beginning of her life really set her up to struggle with when she had, you know, when she finally got married and had the other children. And I think Isaac has his own issues. He loved his children, but he didn't always know how to communicate with them.
No, I understand that. You know, it's funny because my sister died under strange circumstances in July of 2010. But before she died, we went to somewhere and she said to the lady, I went to buy something. She said, oh, she's adopted. That's why I don't look like her. And that's why she never had that doll. And I looked at her, and she says, well, you're different. I said, that's because I'm smarter than you. Let me tell you, that hurt. And I never found out. She never said she was joking. So you really don't know. You know, your words can really kill you, just the matter of words and how you take them. So where do we see Faith and Hannah next? What's next for them?
Well, I think they will connect again in a future story, because even though Hannah is in Philadelphia right now and Faith is in Williamsburg, but we also know the British are being very successful. They've driven Washington out of New York, and they're eyeing Philadelphia, which is now the seat of power for the Patriots. So as the war moves on, people are going to move too. So I see those sisters are going to connect again.
Are you going to do one on the war itself, on the Revolutionary War in 1776, and on the signing of the Declaration of Independence?
Well, I follow the characters, and the war is primarily a backdrop, though sometimes it does come in. But right now, the book I'm working on completing now, which is called No Greater Loss, is set in 1777 in Williamsburg.
Oh,
and
nice.
At that time, they're waiting to see if the British are going to invade Virginia and Williamsburg. But my series basically, it has the Revolutionary War as a backdrop, and each book in the series is a year in the war, because I started with 1774, and I'm going to end with 1781, which is Yorktown, is just down the road from Williamsburg. And Yorktown, of course, is where Cornwallis surrendered to Washington.
So how much research do you have to do to make sure that people that read this and know the time period know that you're accurate?
A lot. I do a lot
That's
of
hard.
Reading. I travel when I can. I really enjoy traveling to Philadelphia and visiting the Historic Center. That was very nice, because I had never been to Philadelphia before. But I try to read, and I check with the Rockefeller Library in Williamsburg has been very helpful about certain details, because 18th century life was very different from you've got to think about how things were handled, what was done, what was acceptable and not acceptable, what was available, what was not. There's a lot of factors that play into the decisions they make that are based upon what life was like back then.
So what about William and Franklin? Do they ever settle their differences? And is Franklin going to be in danger again? Everybody wants to kill my poor favorite Benjamin Franklin.
Well, the sad thing about the history is William and Ben remained estranged. Eventually, and William's prison experience was really horrific. He does end up in England, when his father heads to Europe before, to France, he tries to reach out, and Franklin will not see him. And part of the hardship for William Franklin is his son, which is Benjamin Franklin's grandson, Temple Franklin, is with Benjamin Franklin. So he not only loses his father, he loses his son, all due to the war.
I'm looking at that last scene. Oh, my God. That's really, really scary. And after all the trouble that they went through, it's almost as if the ending is like whatever. So why do people say that patients wanted the other daughter home? But what do they say when somebody dies, they're home now? I don't know if people really feel that they're really home, because they're on the other side. And sometimes they actually feel that you can talk to them on the other side. That's scary.
Well, I think, you know, patients wanting Faith is home is like the grass is always greener. She's thinking she'll be home. She's forgetting about the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And patients dying, I think, brings some closure for Faith with her mother, that they did find some, you know, that, they, you know, even if they didn't talk about making peace, she knows her mother loved her, even if she didn't always show that. And I think that's probably what Faith needed to know. And she has a deeper understanding of what caused her mother to be the way she was.
It's too bad to wait till she was almost gone. That's the sad part. People get angry, and then right before somebody dies, they remind themselves, well, maybe I want to straighten this out, instead of straightening it out all their lives. So how does she feel about Lizette? What kind of a person was she?
Lizette was complicated because she was one person on the surface and somebody else underneath. And I don't want to reveal too much, but that's, I think, what made her dangerous, because you really could not see what was going on underneath that beautiful facade. And she was, you know, people saw this beautiful society woman, beautiful dancer, beautiful entertainer. They didn't see what was actually going on underneath, and that she could be quite dangerous.
People don't sometimes want to see what's dangerous. Sometimes people just want to see them in their own eyes, not the way they really are. It's not that they're not perceptive, they just don't want to face it, which is really sad. And when they read the ending, they'll understand why I said that. That it is sad. And Faith, how does she come to terms with all the things that happened? We have a couple of minutes. How does she come to terms with everything that happened? And, of course, she wants to go home, and I don't blame her.
I think this is something that she will have to process over time.
Yeah.
Because you had a lot of death. You had a lot of changes within her family. And she's pretty much emotionally done with Philadelphia at the end of it. So going home means, you know, she can go to Williamsburg, and she has closure. But I think she's going to have quite a few sleepless nights over what she has witnessed, because there's some things it's very hard to process. And it wouldn't surprise me if there would be a little bit of PTSD involved in there.
That is very true. So who is Charity?
Charity is a younger sister. She is a younger sister with Faith and Hannah. She has not been married. She stayed at home. I really don't know at this point if she's going to stay at home, if she's going to marry, or she's going to have some other role. But she's one of the younger children, so though she's older now, she hasn't been out in the world, out from the farm. And since Patience dies at the end of it, she may have the freedom to do more than she has in the past.
I like Charity. She's got a different outlook and different kind of personality than the other two. Because Faith is one way and Hannah is one way, and she's another way. It's like three siblings, but you wonder sometimes if they're going to have to work together to get something done. That's scary. And then when you learn more about Lizette and Elizabeth, you're like, oh, my God. you know, there's like, you know, blindsided from all sides. So what else, when is this new one coming out? That's first of all.
I would say probably later this year. I'm still working on completing it, and then it has to go through the editing process with Level of Best Books and drafts and things like that. So my bet would be probably, my guess would be in the fall.
That's not bad. You know, I try to. I self-publish because, what can I say? And I have a really good self-publisher, and she's not a fortune, and she's really good. But when I ask for advice, I'm writing my story about what happened to me. When you ask for advice, you can't always get advisors, people to help you. So how do you get someone that's like in Virginia or something about history or the Quakers or somebody to give you some insight without telling them you don't have to do anything, I just need the information. And yet I can't get help. That's the sad part.
Well, I always let people know that I'm researching for a book, that I write fiction, and I try to keep my questions as concrete as possible so they're not as hard to answer, such as, you know, was such and such, in, like was Washington in Virginia in May of whatever the year, you know, and then because I had to do some research in one book about the Capitol building there. It's like I'm reading they did balls, but, you know, balls and fancy parties there, but I don't see where they do it. And I found out that the version of the Capitol they have in Colonial Williamsburg is an older version that burned down, and the one during the Revolutionary period was bigger and had these enormous ballrooms where they had parties and stuff. So you have to think about what exactly is crucial for you to know to make it answerable.
Yeah, I did. The question was, what happens when an attorney takes a property of the plaintiff without the plaintiff's knowledge, reads it, it was a journal, and doesn't give it back, and your attorney doesn't demand to get it back, and the person Xeroxes it and demands to have you depose on something that was none of their business? That was my question, and nobody could answer it. And I got...
That has a lot to it.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I've already said it to my attorneys, and what can I say? But I try. So where can everybody find out more about you and your work? And are you going to do... I have to do this because Gina's going to want to know. Are you going to another... tour with Partners in Crime for this one, for the next one?
Possibly. I will have, you know, I like working with Partners in Crime. You get a lot out of it. So
right now
I'm going to say yes. And I do have a website. It's Julie Bates Weebly. And you can find me on BookBub and also at Goodreads as well.
Well, that is great because this is interesting. And I like books that are historical fiction, but I also like them when they're factual and they're good. And, of course, Benjamin Franklin. But thank you so much, everybody. It's a beautiful day outside. Let's see, what do we have today? Yes, it's freezing. It's 48 degrees. It's a heat wave. I don't know how it is by you, but it's 48 degrees. But it hasn't been above 20 for the last couple of days. Everybody, Julie, thank you so much. Everybody have a great day. And bye.
Bye-bye.